You took over as captain, I think, from Ian Smith. If I remember rightly, he was captain for a couple of seasons before you. Three seasons before. So, what was he like as a captain?
He was very much he do it, you follow me, sort of like captain, sort of thing. And plus he was in the international scene at the time, so people, did look up to him. They did look up to him, sort of, as a player and as a leader. And with his dad and stuff like that, he had great history within the club, which always helps, I think, a player to, gain the respect of sort of like his supporters and his fellow players, really, I think. But he was, and every time he played, he was a player that always got himself in really good nick. He's really fit, he's really quick, good hands, good link player. As we talked about earlier about the changing face of rugby, he actually, developed as sort of like seven role, and how it is in modern day now, sort of thing, really. And he was good to play with, and he was a winner, sort of thing. And he understood what it took, sort of like, to win a game, and he understood sort of like the importance of winning a game when you're actually wearing a cherry and white, which is is critical, really.
What was he like in the changing room before you went out?
Yeah, from memory, it was a long time ago now, but I don't think he was in a great shape, sort of thing. He wasn't, he'd sit down, he'd tell you what you do, sort of thing, and he thought about it a lot, and he understood the tactics of more than sort of like saying, well, we got, beating you on the chest and stuff like that, do you know what I mean? He wasn't one of those, but he was sort of like, he would think about it and then try and work a way around it tactically, as opposed to, right, brute force, where other captains can be like that in.
How did you handle that?
As a captain,
as a captain of the changing room.
For me, I was caught in between the two stores. Really, I think there was a time for when you had to open your mouth and then you had to let the lads have it. And there's a time where you had to sort of like, well, come on and let's work it out, sort of thing. And difficulty with being a captain and being a prop at half time, sort of thing. Because the physicality of the position, sort of thing, and what you can see, you have to rely on other people, sort of thing, do you know what I mean? And you basically, it's a case of what you perceive sometimes can be different, and you have to take a collective view. And that's why, for me, my team was good at that sort of thing, for me to have a few others. And and then days as well, the captain had a lot greater say than the coaches. Now it's different, the coaches say everything. And the captain does say a lot, really. You take him in and out of battle then. In them days, the captain had a lot to do with tactics, selection, and everything, do you know what I mean? And now, he has nothing to do with that. Like, it's more like a cricket captain, like, as you make the final decisions on personnel and sort of like, and how they do it, and like I say, and the tactics of how we're going to do it, like I say, it's not like it is now.
And you handed the captaincy on to Dave Sims. What was he like as captain?
He was very sort of like, he was a talented guy. He was very talented. Like I say, he did play for England, but I always thought that Dave could have done better than what he had, sort of thing. I always thought that, and the talent he had and the physique he had. Sometimes, he'd sort of like go sort of like the easy route, as opposed to sort of like, well, this is the route that we've got to go. And it was a shame that, went that way. But as a captain, or as a player, you can fault him. I think he was very, he's a talented guy. And, he was one of those in Gloucester at the time that would probably get in a lot of other sides. From the at the time of that era, sort of like the early 90s, there was a lot of guys that probably wouldn't have, but he was one of those that would.
And then Pete Glanville after him?
He was all like blood and guts, really. He put his head where it's a story at Bristol. He went to Bristol and he was on the memorial ground, it's a full house, and he came in, sort of, and someone was on the wrong side of the ball, so I decided that he was going to have a bit sort of a shoe pie. And next thing I know, sort of like, and I did think of it at the time, actually, but then Glanner sort of like got up and went away. And then, of course, he had the shocking of blonde hair. All his hair was sort of like red sort of thing with blood. And he gets him off. And then he was captain. And then as he went off, he said, right, then the message came on that I had to, because he was going to come back on, that I had to sort of like lead the side. And then I was going to see, look, these Bristol nurses are done, so sort of like Glanner, our captain, and I sort of mate, and all the rest of it, like that. They transpired, we looked at the video and they slowed it down, and it was me who actually so, if you look at him there, he's got this scar, and every time I see him, he always sort of goes like that. Or like that, so, and he's a very good, you know, he is a, I see him, you know, every kind of day sort of thing, because he is a mate sort of thing, like, so, yeah, but he was one of those guys who would, seriously, yeah, brave, seriously brave, but he was just, yeah, he should have played for England, he just, his injuries done him in really at the end, you know, I think the guy who had something like 20 odd operations. Yeah. You know, I mean, he was just crazy, like, you know what I mean?
Hell of a player.
Oh, God, yeah, yeah.
Had a few. I think he had a few A-team games.
That's it, yeah. And he's sort of like, in the time they was playing, like New Zealand, they used to come over and tour for the South West or something like that, and then he played on Anfield with the Premiership All-Stars against New Zealand, I think it was, in a sort of like, you know, celebrity game, or not celebrity game, but representative game, rather, sort of thing. So, yeah, so, you know, he was good, you know, only well to sort of manage the club, like, you know, and that era of Dean Ryan and Nigel Melville with him as captain, and the very successful era for the club as well.
Yeah, that was a key season, wasn't it? When Pete Glanville captained them for the first time, because that's when St Andre came in, Ojomo came in, Fanalua came in, and so it was a very radically different side that Pete Glanville was captaining.
And the results from memory, sort of like you seem to sort of like change different players and different ideas of how to win it, sort of thing, you know. And sometimes, you know, in the era prior to that, that it was very forward dominated, sort of thing. You know what I mean? If we couldn't tuck them up front, then we didn't have a plan B, really. So, but with that, you know, that new likes of
that was the season.
Yeah,
they started running the ball for the first time.
Hello, you know, Jomo and Tomsey and Terry, you know, and Saint Andre. You know, there's a lot of backs names being mentioned there, sort of thing, which gives you a different perspective or angle on how to win a game. Like,
and Gloucester won the C&G Cup.
Yeah.
Which was a turning point.
Yeah,
really,
definitely, yeah. And for once then, it's been a long time, sort of thing. Well, most of my career at Gloucester prior to then, sort of thing, it was a case that we actually can win things here, sort of thing, again. And, you know, got a bit of belief back in, you know, and because the other. That was size prior, like my era prior to sort of the amateur era, he was probably scarred with sort of like failure, really, and sort of like because of the burden that we had on our shoulders. The new guys coming in, they had no burden, they had no baggage with them, sort of thing. They just had a license to play, sort of thing, which they did. They did very well with good players.
Because I think everybody remembers that picture of Pete Glanville holding the cup above his head. Yeah, I mean, it's the first time Gloucester had won anything for rather a long time.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
That 1978 season, I've got the list of players here. Would you like to just go through and comment on the new ones who had come in?
Yeah, well, there is sort of, like, obviously, Richard Toms, he came in, and not people at the time knew a lot about Tomsey then. You know, he came in, obviously, somewhere had watched him, and somewhere they picked him up, and it fitted in it, he came over. Great player, great pro. Getting himself in good nick and really good rugby player, I think. He understood rugby, you know, and Terry came in, and with them in the centre as well, so Terry could be a bit offsetted, and it could sort of like, you know, he demanded the ball all the time and he wanted to run from here and run from there, but Thomas, he was a bit more pragmatic about it, sort of like kept him under sort of like, you know, control, really, and sort of like nurtured him way through, you know. Chris Catlin at fullback, sort of thing, you know, running fullback for Gloucester, which, you know, was and not an erred off, because prior to that we had Tim Smith, who could run. He was good running from fullback, but Cats, he bought something good. He's good under the eyeball, he's good under receiving the eyeball, and sort of like fielding it from his own kick. Aldie Lumsden, quick guy, you know, very quick. Scott Benton, sort of, again, he came in slightly different, and again, probably sort of like filling in a area that Gloucester had been light on for some years. Vicks came in. Probably it was a start for him then, sort of thing, but he wasn't the player then that he came to be, sort of thing, in those early days, you know. But Neil McCarthy was another one that came in an area that we needed strengthening. Oge came in from Bath, you know, big back rower, you know, again, powerful. Saint Andre, big name, a lot of people. And I thought at the time, actually, when he came, I thought, Jesus, this man, you know, because he didn't look in great nick when he arrived, I must admit, and he came in, but he had a big reputation. Terrible trainer, absolute terrible, and I thought they wasted their money on him. But as soon as you crossed that line at 3 o'clock, the guy turned into a different man. But as soon as that whistle went, he went back to his old ways. But He was a very good rugby player, strong.
Maybe you say that. I mean, it seems surprising that he's been so successful as a coach himself.
Yeah. Well, I don't think with his coach, I think what Saint-André does, I think he's a bit like Clive Woodward, if I could say that, in a way of, he's got very good eye for a player, very good eye. I don't think he understands how rugby needs to be won and needs to be played with a good eye. I think what he does now is, or what he struggled with early doors, is didn't have a team round him to implement what he wanted to do. And like in the Clive Woodward era, where he brought in this, well, scrum coach, attack coach, defence coach, like that. People were doing that, and that's why he's been successful after, you know, more successful after, I think, because he's surrounded himself with people that he thinks that, like a forward coach, like a back coach. And, well, but he actually sits them down and say to them, this is the way we should be playing, sort of thing.
Yeah, so his strengths as a manager.
Yeah, definitely. And a good eye for a player, very good eye, sort of thing. You know, Ian Sanders, you know, good pass on him, so like, again. Brian Johnson, very good sort of like quick man. Laurie Beck, you know, there's some scrum halves in there. Obviously, the scrum half area prior to that needed filling up. Craig Emerson, another Northerner who, you know, quick, good feet, peripheral player probably all the way through it. And Phil Greening was probably starting out at the time. And again, another shame of a guy that, you know, I thought who could play a lot more, that he did play for Gloucester and have a bigger part of play. And, you know, again, another guy who changed the face of looking, I think, you know. Incredibly good hands, he had a hands and a kick of a good three quarter. And
well, he did turn up at standoff an awful lot.
Yeah. He was just like a school kid playing Premiership Rugby sort of thing. Like in a nice way sort of thing, where he just wanted to play, he just wanted to have the ball and wanted to run with it really. And, but very skillful, and a good bloke, nice bloke, and. You know, a good Gloucester man sort of thing.
Having got on to talking about Saint-André as a coach briefly there, let's divert onto coaches you have known here at Gloucester. How do you rate them?
There's something like, you know, if Saint-André, Dean Ryan, Barry Corliss, Viv Woolley, Richard Hill. You know what I mean? So, yeah, there has been a few over the years. I think, you know, by far the best team of coaches, Dean Ryan and Nigel Melville, without a shadow of a doubt. Yeah, they're very methodical, very intelligent men, very analytical. They sorted it out, they understood, they left no stone unturned sort of thing to make sure that you was prepared and we had the right information on the teams and how you wanted to play. They changed, they played a system called three pod, which was sort of like trial prior to us playing it in New Zealand. And they used to, and a unique way of playing it, won the championship by 16 points playing it sort of thing. People couldn't live with it.
How did that work?
Basically, it came up from, say you had a scrum on the left-hand side, and they were trying to put the ball in an area, and it was all about putting balls in areas where, say, they're five off the left hand, they go right across the pitch into the right hand, then the loose forwards or two of the loose forwards would go with the ball to the far side, one of the seconds rows would go, the front row would go to the middle and the rest would come back, then the back line would fill in front of the three pod sort of thing. That's what's called three pod, and then they'll either pick a pass and go, but all the time they had someone in. That's when Azam and there's barnstorming runs up the middle. Do you remember that? So like Trevor Woodman had barnstorming runs up the middle, and basically sort of bang bang right got to there. Everyone was just filling in there. You had to keep shape all the time. So whatever the ball was, that wasn't, you know, you couldn't sort of like what they call follow a run. Then basically you had to sort of stay in your channel, and it was up to the sort of like people to get that sort of thing. And there's grey areas. The grey areas was in between, say, like 5 meter. And the area in the middle of the park, and there was a 10 meter where the ball couldn't go because that was an area we didn't want to play in, and it was very much regimented but worked. And we drilled that for hours and hours and hours and hours. And then when we had to win Newcastle out here, sort of thing, where he's down to 20-odd points, and we sort of like bang 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 just tore him apart because it just clicked for us. And then we had we had the sort of like ability and the confidence in it, and it was just we watched hours of tapes of rugby league, how they cut, and because in that, especially at wide, where they're more skillful at wingers in the back rowers, so where they sort of like link with the wingers and stuff like that on cuts on the shoulder ball and stuff like that, and then in the middle where we just had to go forward, that's where sort of like the front row was, just to carry it, do the yards through the middle, very much rugby league style but in different pods. That's where rugby league came into it. I like watched loads of rugby league at the time, sort of thing, and not only defence but offensively as well. And you know, they was very clever, and people, a lot of people in England try to copy it, and that process was brought into this country by those two guys, sort of thing, like, you know what I mean. And a very, very good way to play. You know, since then I've tried it in other times, but you got the player to do it. It's a high skill, high mentality of very technical, clinical, where you clean out because you haven't got the players around you because they're all spread across the pitch, sort of thing. Now they play a lot different, like Gloucester's sort of power game, sort of thing, like, you know what I mean, power through the middle, power through the red corner, big guy, sort of thing, you know, putting dents in defences. But at that time, it was different and very enjoyable to play, very enjoyable. Mm. And you know, they understood it, like, you know, and they went through a lot of time to actually sort of implement it as well, which was good.
Yeah.
And yeah, but I would say those two guys were far the, well, probably the most successful guys as well in the time that I was here at the, you know, to play under as well.
Yeah. Did you find the coaching very different under different regimes?
You know, people say about this, but since that was why sort of like Dean Ryan and Nigel Melville's time was very radical because the way they played it. And then other people say, well, there's only a certain way to play rugby. That they turn that right on their head, sort of thing. Do you know what I mean? That's what it was different. But, you know, Santon Trey was very much kicking, territory based, you know, very low risk, very, you know, dominated by the forwards. You know, Gloucester of old was, you know, their tradition of, to the detriment of other players, I think, who were skillful and not skillful. It was that, you know, they had a reputation of being strong in the arms, put that on opposition, sort of thing. Maybe that was the wrong thing. Sometimes you did get matched up, and like I said earlier, and nowhere to go with it after that. And but it was a very macho sort of way of playing rugby, sort of thing, which were through Gloucester, through down through the, you know, the years that they had big forwards, big nasty forwards, you know, big reputation. Sometimes the people wanted to play that way, but it didn't have the sort of like personnel to actually implement it. Which, so then you had to work out a different way of playing. And you know, that, I think that defines a good coach or a bad coach, really. Yeah, you know, if you got sort of like, you know, the Oxford's grow good in the scrum. You know, you can't use the scrum, you got to get it in and get it out and get on with it, sort of thing. But if you've got to withdraw, you lose it, you know. So, but I think for all of it, I think, you know, like, there is, again, Melville and those guys, you know, they were the best to sort of like play under, and they did it by a long way, I think.